Good morning. The continuation of the Federal Election Commission's January 19th open session will come to order. And this morning, the commission is going to take up the agent rulemaking as required by the Shays litigation. And, Mr. Vice Chairman, we have a couple of late submitted documents.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move for the suspension of the rules for the timely submission of documents to consider agenda documents 06-03 and 06-03A.
You've heard the Vice Chairman's motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries by the vote of all six commissioners present. And for the Office of General Counsel, we have Mr. Ron Cotwin. Mr. Cotwin, at your leisure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You have before you a draft of a revised explanation and justification for the definitions of agents at 11 CFR 109.3 and 300.2B. Current commission regulations on non-federal funds and coordinated and independent expenditures define agent as any person who has actual authority, either express or implied, to perform certain actions, but do not include persons acting only with apparent authority. These regulations were among the regulations challenged in Shays v. FEC. The district court upheld the commission's definitions of agent under Chevron. However, the court also found that the commission had not satisfied the reasoned analysis requirement of the Administrative Procedure Act because the commission had not provided adequate explanation of its decision to exclude from the definitions of agent persons acting only with apparent authority. The court remanded the definitions to the commission for further action consistent with its opinion. This draft responds to the Shays decision by providing a revised explanation and justification for the current definitions of agent. The draft provides three principal reasons for the Commission's decision to exclude persons acting only with apparent authority and retain the current definitions of agent. First, as required by BICRA, the Commission's definitions of agent cover individuals engaged in a broad range of activities specifically related to BICRA-related conduct. In doing so, the definitions significantly increase the number of individuals and types of conduct subject to the Act, especially when compared to the Commission's pre-BICRA definition of agent. Second, the definitions cover the wide range of activity prohibited by BICRA and the Act, thereby providing incentives for compliance while protecting core political activity permitted by BICRA and affirmed by the Supreme Court in McConnell. Under an apparent authority standard, in contrast, this core political activity could be restricted or subject to commission investigation. Third, the definitions are best suited for the political context, which is materially different from other contexts in which apparent authority is applicable. We also request that any vote include authority for OGC to make any technical or conforming amendments. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ron. Is there discussion? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I want to acknowledge the hard work that went into this document, particularly by Mr. Cotwin and Mr. Deutsch and their team in OGC, and by Mike French up on the ninth floor, who was circulating drafts at midnight the other night. I think everybody worked very hard on this, and the results show. And we've all spent a lot more time with the restatement of agency than perhaps we ever expected to. And I think that the draft has a lot to recommend it. I particularly appreciate that the discussion of implied authority makes clear that not only the breadth of that doctrine as stated in the restatement, but also that the Commission recognizes how broad that doctrine is and that that really can take care of most of the situations that I think the plaintiffs were worried about. I think that fundamentally whether we include or exclude apparent authority here is not actually going to make that much practical difference in terms of the number of cases that are going to be affected by that. I think it's going to be a very small number of cases that where it would make a difference. And I base that not just on my own impressions, but on discussions with our general counsel, who's more familiar with than anybody with what's in our enforcement docket. And I think the court made clear that this is a permissible construction of the law, and I agree with that. And having said all those nice things about the document, I'm not going to vote for it. because I think reasonable minds can disagree. These present close questions of interpretation, and my personal preference would have been to include apparent authority. There weren't four votes for that. It's not the first time, and it won't be the last that I'm on the short end of the vote. But I very much respect all the hard effort that went into this and the quality of the document that resulted. And I respect that, as I said, that reasonable minds can come to different conclusions on this, and that my colleagues did, and that's fine. And I particularly appreciate that we're going to have a vote on this today and that we're going to be able to get this one off the table and move on to the other important issues that we have in the works right now. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Walther.
I have a comment also. Being new to the commission, it's been a great experience to watch how well the commission's worked together on this, and I'd like to echo the comments by Commissioner Weintraub regarding the hard work that went into this. I think the explanations and justifications more than cover the necessary reasons to support the position of the commission taken today. I also, however, am going to join Commissioner Weintraub in not supporting the position taken today, my reason being that as I look at the legislation, although I was not here at the time, it seems fairly clear to me that the philosophy, even though not the clear intent of Congress as stated in the bill of BCRA, would be to include the doctrine of apparent authority in the doctrine of agency. First of all, it was included for over 25 years in FEC regulations with respect to expenditures. Under the rule adopted today, it will not remain there. When BCRA was enacted, it would seem to me that, again, to some degree, I'm only thinking from terms of how the legislation came about, because certainly there was not a great deal of debate about it. It's not likely that BCRA and those who voted for it, certainly those who drafted, would wanted to have excluded the doctrine of apparent authority from the doctrine of agency with respect to expenditures. And since there wasn't any change in the definition of the term agent, it would seem to me that the most likely intent of BCRA would be to also include it with respect to fundraising. This was mentioned briefly by the court in the Shays decision, the district court, who also seemed to concur with that analysis, but did not consider it sufficiently strong, in her opinion, to reverse the regulation on that ground. It got reversed on other grounds. So looking at the two choices as to whether to include apparent agency or not to include it, I think it's more consistent with the intent to include it. And for that reason, I'm not going to be able to support the regulation that's being adopted today. But I do so with the strong statement that I feel clear that the explanations and justifications contained in the document today certainly meet the requirements of Chevron and the APA. So with that, thank you for the ability to make these comments this time.
Thank you, Commissioner Walther. I very much appreciate both Commissioner Weintraub and Commissioner Walther's comments. And I agree that there's a tough set of issues that the commission has been focused on. Commissioner Weintraub and I often joke about how many months we've been working on this agent rulemaking, and it's been more than we care to remember or acknowledge, but it's been quite a few, and I think the reason is, as Commissioner Weintraub indicated, is that reasonable people can often come to different conclusions in these types of issues, particularly when Congress didn't define agency in the statute, and then it's left to the FEC to try to sort that through. But I do share the thoughts that reasonable people can come at this kind of issue from a number of different vantage points, and in my view, there's a zone of permissible choices, statutory interpretation choices, and policy choices that can be made. So I very much appreciate the comments of both of my colleagues here. I plan to vote for the document before us today. I do think it lays out in greater detail than we did in 2002 the rationale for excluding apparent authority. And I think one of the key points, as Commissioner Weintraub outlined, is that actual authority, express and implied, is a very broad and durable concept that reaches a wide range of activities. I think that's true. And sort of a related point to that is that particularly when you have implied actual authority as part of the agency's enforcement arsenal, it is able to reach a lot of circumstances when people are acting on behalf of their principals. I do think the document at several places emphasizes this point, the law of agency turning on when agents act on behalf of their principals, which is a very important concept. And I think the document at some length sets out some of the rationales for why apparent authority is not necessary to effectuate the statute's underlying purposes. I acknowledge that reasonable people can come to different conclusions on that, but that was, I think, the strong effort of the document before us. And also, I think, like the state party fundraising rule that the commission reaffirmed last summer, a key point that is outlined in the document is that it appeared that all the commenters agreed that there had not been any abuses under the current rule, that there had not been any instances that commenters could point to of the current rule fostering corruption or being used as a vehicle for circumventing the law. And the explanation and justification today takes that into account, but also notes that if in the future the agency becomes aware of abuses that are occurring as a result of the rule, that it is well within its discretion to revisit the rule. And so in that respect, I think today's action is, if we vote to reaffirm this rule, would be consistent with what we did last summer when we voted to reaffirm the state party fundraising event rule based in part on that rationale. Other thoughts or comments? Mr. Vice Chairman.
Just briefly listening to Chairman Toner, I was reminded of a quip attributed to Mo Udall, where he once said, when a political gathering, everything's been said, but not everyone said it. So with that in mind, I'd like to just say that my intention is to vote in favor of the draft proposal, largely for the reasons articulated by the chairman. I think in addition to the explanation and justifications, looking at both how the term implied authority, as well as the term how the scope of authority is interpreted, that it captured the potential abuses that were described in the testimony before the commission, and in addition looking at the litigation history, the enforcement history over the last 3 years of the term that we are retaining today, or that, assuming that there are sufficient votes, we will retain today, I thought was important in indicating that the rule as it is currently written is proving effective in deterring abuse in this area.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. Commissioner Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make a couple of notes about why I think it is appropriate to retain the current rule with this new explanation, and also to comment on the very active and irrepressible Mr. Bauer's comments on his website. I think it's wonderful that he's got a way to make ex-party communications without them being ex-party. and I think input from the outside is very helpful, and of course that's all open and above board and available to everyone. First, one of the things that is a little bit odd about the agency rulemaking and the approach to agency in BCRA is that, as I understand it, agents of the campaign or candidate are covered by restrictions on the campaign or the candidate in the normal course anyway. And so BCRA was written a little in a belt and suspenders manner to cover agents in a context where it's not entirely clear that was even necessary. And so one of the lessons that I take from that is that you know, everybody's focused on when is the candidate going to be liable, or when the political party committee or political committee going to be liable for actions of their agent. That problem would have been present anyway. And one of the things that that I think the way BCRA was written brings home is that the agent is liable. And as we know, the question of personal liability for just about any campaign finance violation was often resolved in favor of, no, only the committee's liable. You know, in most circumstances, the treasurer may be liable, but in an official capacity. And so I think there's a degree to which people may be a little bit misfocused on for understandable reasons, on when's the candidate liable or when's the campaign liable, when I think the first principle is these rules, the statute and these rules in pursuance of there make the agents liable. And that, for me, is one of the reasons that apparent authority is not kind of a natural extension of the principle behind the law, because that would involve, apparent authority would involve a case where there'd been a manifestation to a third party, but not to the agent. Because if there were a manifestation to the agent, that would be the actual authority expressed or implied. And in terms of Mr. Bauer's comments, I think he and every other respondent counsel, he's perfectly representative in that respect of lawyers on both sides of the ideological spectrum and whatever, would love to have a form that the campaign could give to all their fundraisers and say, sign this, you know, in good faith, and brief them on it and do this, and then the candidate or campaign wouldn't be liable anymore. And my experience at the commission and the exposure to agency law that I've been able to gather in the past months tells me that that's simply not possible. That there's no real-world situation in which that is going to be adequate to do it. And so the kinds of questions that are raised about, well, how important is it that in the hypothetical that the fundraiser, that the title of the person is fundraising chairman, as opposed to something else of lesser importance, the answer is, well, that may be a relevant factor. What about the allegedly rogue agent? And I say allegedly because the problem that I've seen in real enforcement cases as opposed to hypotheticals is that that is precisely the issue that is disputed. And so, you know, if we set out a rule that says, well, rogue agents, you're off the hook for rogue agents, then you've just shifted the argument. And, in fact, as we know, real cases are way messier than hypotheticals. And there are always these other factors that come in there. And so as much as I would love to give the attorneys for committees the perfect guideline to perfectly insulate yourself from ever having to respond to a complaint, and the reason that I would like to give them that is because they would all use it, and they would want to use it, and it would contribute significantly to compliance with the law, is that in the real world, there are just too many things going on to be assured that we could write such a set of instructions or a rule that would enable such a set of instructions that would actually work. And from the reformer's side, I hope that this explanation and my discussion of it will give them some assurance that, in fact, we are trying to promulgate a robust rule and that we're not intending to put out something that is simply going to be a set of formal strictures, and, you know, if you do this and you don't do that one thing, then you can, you know, wink and nod all the way to election day and get away with it. That, in fact, we're going to look at the facts of cases that come before us and construe these rules in a reasonable way, and that's going to mean inevitably that we've got some close calls, and I just don't think that we can avoid that. But I think the rule proposed is well suited to the objectives, as I understand them, of the legislation, and is about as good as I think we can reasonably get in terms of telling people what they need to do to ensure that they comply, and for indicating how it is we're going to pursue cases when we think people haven't complied.
Commissioner Von Spakovsky.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I say I'm last. That's something I'm used to in elementary school. we would always get alphabetized in the classroom, and I was always
don't
last.
Don't complain to me. You're in the middle on this panel.
I am going to support this, but I want to say briefly that I agree with the comments of my fellow commissioners here. And, you know, BCRA charts a very narrow course between two overarching objectives that can conflict if we're not very careful in how we enforce the law. On the one hand, we have to protect our election process from corruption that can damage the democracy and the confidence of people and the legitimacy of our governance. But on the other hand, we have to encourage citizens to participate in the election process, not just by going to the polls and voting, but also helping the candidates they believe will help and help the nation govern best. The dissenters from the Constitutional Convention were adamant that we needed a Bill of Rights to protect us from an all-powerful federal government, a government today, including the FEC, which is more powerful than any of them could have ever imagined. The associational rights of our citizens were put into the First Amendment in the Bill of Rights, the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. This regulation directly impacts the associational rights of citizens. And I think we've struck the correct and proper balance between the intent of BCRA to foster a clean election process and our obligation to protect the constitutional rights of citizens to volunteer to participate. Defining an agent as a person who has actual authority, express or implied, to perform certain actions provides the wide coverage we need to enforce BCRA against individuals and campaigns who are acting on behalf of their candidates. It's a clear and unambiguous rule. It's easily understood and followed, and it won't allow circumvention of the law or create an appearance of corruption. I do not believe that apparent authority is needed to carry out the purposes of the statute. Apparent authority is, frankly, an amorphous and confusing legal standard that doesn't depend on the clearly demonstrated issue of whether an agent received authority from his principal to act on his behalf, but whether some third party had some perception, mistaken or not, that a particular campaign volunteer had the authority to act on behalf of the principal. I think it's a standard that infringes on basic constitutional rights of association and democratic traditions whereby citizens are free to lend their support to political causes of their own choosing. I don't think it's a standard that should be applied in the political context, which is made up of relatively few paid individuals, but large numbers of citizen volunteers, which is the exact opposite of the commercial context in which it's usually applied. I do think we're doing the right thing here, and we are striking the right balance and carrying out the intent of Congress with this statute.
Thank you, Commissioner. Other discussion? And we have a proposed set of amendments that were authored by the Vice Chairman and myself. Mr. Vice Chairman?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the document 0603A is a series of technical changes. As been noted earlier, there was a lot of late-night efforts to try and bring together the document in a final form, and there were a few errors made in the document that was released on Friday, and so document 06-03A would correct those.
Are you moving approval?
Assuming there's no further discussion, I'd like to move the adoption of document 0603 as amended by document 0603A, and also move to grant the Office of the General Counsel the power to make any necessary technical or conforming amendments to those documents.
Vice Chairman has moved approval of agenda document number 0603 as amended by agenda document 0603-A, and also granting the Office of General Counsel authority to make any technical conforming amendments as may be necessary. Discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
The motion passes by a vote of 4-2. Commissioners Von Spakovsky, Mason, Toner, and Lenhardt voting yes. Commissioners Weintraub and Walther voting no. That concludes our agenda for today. I just want to note briefly what lies ahead. in the ongoing Shays rulemakings. This is completes the fifth Shays rulemaking, and there are four more remaining to be completed. On Wednesday and Thursday of this week, the Commission will hold a hearing on the coordination rulemaking. It will be a two-day hearing with six panels of witnesses. Then on February 9th, the Commission plans to take up the solicit and direct rulemaking as required by the Shays litigation. And on the following open meeting on February 16th, the Commission plans to take up the rulemaking governing federal election activities. And with those two rulemakings, that will bring the Commission through seven of the Shays rulemakings, and there will be two remaining at that point. And that's the and then we plan to have further scheduling information as we get into February on our plans beyond that. With that, Mr. Costa, do we have any administrative matters to bring to the Commission's attention?
There are no matters.
Hearing none, this meeting is adjourned.